Today is Wednesday, the 27th of December. This is God's Salvation Through History. This is the last class this quarter, and I appreciate y'all allowing me to teach this. I hope that you found it beneficial and interesting. We'll go through the conclusion tonight on a few more, looking at a few more of these cases, and then we'll wrap it up. 2 Chronicles, the 32nd chapter, verses 1 through 22, deals with the account between Hezekiah and Sennacherib. And in this, Sennacherib, he is the king of Assyria, and along with his army, he's entered into Judah to take control of the cities, according to 2 Chronicles chapter 32 and verse 1. Hezekiah, king of Judah, saw that the Assyrians were coming to take the cities in Judah along with Jerusalem, and he started taking measures against the invasion, and he started making preparations, according to verses 2 and 3. And what Judah did was they went throughout and they stopped all the springs and the brooks so that the water would be limited. He didn't want Sennacherib to see or have plenty of water for him and for his troops and for his horses and cattle and so forth. So they stopped all the springs and the brooks so that the water would be limited. Hezekiah had the walls around the city to be built up, and he made javelins and shields in abundance, according to verses 4 and 5. Hezekiah, he set up captains of war over his people and spoke encouragement to the people to prepare them. Hezekiah tells them to be strong and courageous, not to be afraid or dismayed because of the Assyrian king, due to there was more for Judah than all the multitude with Assyria. 2 Chronicles 32, verses 6 and 7. So his words of encouragement was, there's more for us than there is for Assyria. And, of course, what he was relying upon is that with God and his help, with God on his side, then any other army would be, you know, couldn't overcome them. And, of course, that had been proven to Israel in the past. They should have known that when God's fighting for them, it doesn't matter how many are against you, you're going to win anyway because God's going to prepare it that way. So he offers encouragement to those people and tells them, and he tells the people that God is with them to help them and to fight their battles, and God is stronger than the arm of flesh. 2 Chronicles 32:8. When you think about that statement, that's something to reflect upon. When Hezekiah tells them that God's there, he's going to help them, he's going to fight their battles, but more so when you think about the concept that God is stronger than the arm of flesh. No matter what the arm of flesh is that you're up against, Hezekiah said, God is stronger than that. Now, when we look at things and we see the reality of something, and we see that, then we think automatically that, well, the odds may be in favor of them, or, you know, we're pretty limited, or whatever. And I think this goes back into the New Testament when we are told not to walk by sight. Because if Hezekiah and them walked by sight and they saw the reality of the situation, then there would be dismay and discouragement because they would say, well, we're sorely outnumbered. They're stronger. Assyria, up to this point in time, has took over kingdom after kingdom after kingdom. And there was no one that had stopped them. But, of course, God is allowing them. He's using Assyria in the backdrop. God uses nations how he wants, and how he disposes of them is up to him. But God uses those for a purpose. And we know that Assyria was going to be used as a purpose to bring judgment upon Israel. But again, Hezekiah and Judah saw all these other kingdoms tumbling, and nothing could save them. All these other kingdoms fell and were took over. And of course, that's what the messenger of Sennacherib tells them, is that, well, look at the gods, they're gods. Nobody has stopped them. We've overcame them all. And you're letting Hezekiah fool you into thinking that your God is going to do the same. And none of the other gods have been able to. You go ahead and listen to Hezekiah. You go ahead and listen to what he has to say. Even though he removed the high places, and even though he took this away and that away, He's telling you something false, that your God is going to be able to protect you. Nothing has stopped the king so far of Assyria. And you're not going to be able to stand against him. And these were mighty words. So the servant is persuading the people to not trust in the words of Hezekiah, nor to trust in God to deliver them. So you've got Hezekiah telling them, God's going to deliver us. You've got this army that's besieging you, telling you, your God's not going to deliver you. It hasn't delivered anybody else we went up against, so what makes you think you're any different? When you look at chapter 32 of 2 Chronicles, verses 10 through 15, thus said Sennacherib, king of Assyria, whereon do you trust that you abide in the siege in Jerusalem? Why are you staying in Jerusalem? What are you trusting on? Doth not Hezekiah persuade you to give over yourselves to die by famine and by thirst? This is what Hezekiah is really telling you to do. He's forcing you all into that you're going to die by thirst or by famine, saying, the Lord our God shall deliver us out of the hand of the king of Assyria. Hath not the same Hezekiah taken away his high places and his altars and commanded Judah and Jerusalem, saying, you shall worship before one altar and burn incense upon it? Know ye not what I and my fathers have done unto all the people of other lands? Were the gods of the nations of those lands any ways able to deliver their land out of my hand? Who was there among all the gods of those nations that my fathers utterly destroyed that could deliver his people out of my hand, that your God should be able to deliver you out of my hand? Now therefore let not Hezekiah deceive you, nor persuade you on this matter, neither yet believe him, for no God of any nation or kingdom was able to deliver his people out of my hand and out of the hands of my fathers. How much less shall your God deliver you out of your hand? The other account on that is in 2 Kings, the 18th chapter. 2 Kings, the 18th chapter, verses 29. Starting, thus said the king, let not Hezekiah deceive you, for he shall not be able to deliver you out of his hand. Neither let Hezekiah make you trust in the Lord, saying, the Lord shall surely deliver us, and this city shall not be delivered into the hands of the king of Assyria. Hearken not to Hezekiah, for thus saith the king of Assyria, make an agreement with me by a present, and come out to me, and then eat you every man of his own vine, and every one of his fig tree, and drink every one the waters of his cistern. Until I come and take you away to a land like your own, a land of corn and wine, a land of bread and vineyards, a land of olive oil and all honey, that you may live and not die. Hearken not unto Hezekiah, when he persuadeth you, saying, the Lord will deliver us. Hath any of the gods of the nations delivered at all his land out of the hand of the king of Assyria? You see the pressure that's being applied to the people here, that they're being besieged. They may not have the abundance of things that they need. The brooks and the waters have been stopped up, so there's a limit of water to an extent. And there's going to be a limit and a shortage of food. And so the servant of Sennacherib says, you know, come out and make an agreement with us. You know, we won't have to fight this battle. Come on out, make an agreement with us. You can have plenty of food. You know, we'll share, and we'll even take you to somewhere. You know, to our land where you'll have plenty and all will be there for you. And so, you know, just don't listen to Hezekiah. He's leaving you in there that you're going to die of famine and everything else and telling you that your God is going to deliver you when, in fact, he hasn't delivered anybody out of our hands that we went up against. So this is the dilemma that they're in that he's presenting before the people. And what he's trying to do is persuade the people so that they would turn against Hezekiah. And so they would make that agreement and go out and do that. So during this time, Hezekiah sends to Isaiah the prophet, relaying what is happening, and pleads with Isaiah to pray for Jerusalem, that if by chance God has heard all the words of Assyria reproaching him, and that God would reprove Assyria, in verses 1 through 5 of 2 Kings chapter 19. Why wouldn't God hear? God hears everything. God knows everything. He's in all places at all times. But again, Hezekiah is saying, Isaiah, you know, God has heard. By chance, God has heard what's happening, the reproach that is being done upon you by the Assyrians. So Isaiah tells them to let Hezekiah not be afraid of the words of the king of Assyria, which have blasphemed God. But God would send a spirit upon him, and Sennacherib would hear a rumor and return to his own land, and God would cause Sennacherib to fall by the sword in his own land. Again, Isaiah is saying, this is what's going to happen. He's going to hear a rumor. Okay. Again, what's really interesting is in how God works in his providence. Somehow, some way, God sent the rumor that Sennacherib heard. That rumor that his land was being invaded or whatever, so he turned around and went back. So God works in many mysterious ways, but he works for his children. And that also, not only that, but that he would fall by the sword in his own land. Hezekiah also prays to God. He took the letter that Sennacherib had sent. He goes into the house of the Lord and he lays the letter out and he prays to God before God in the house, and he petitions God to hear and see the words, which were a reproach to God. It wasn't a reproach to him. It wasn't a reproach to Judah or to Hezekiah, but again, it was a direct approach to God, is what he's saying in chapter 19, verses 15 and 16. Hezekiah asked for deliverance so that all the kingdoms of the earth would know that God is the only true living God. That's his prayer. Not just God deliver us because we fear for our life. But again, the purpose when we started out in this class was that number one, that God's children would praise God for his deliverance, and that other nations, the heathen nations, would see God and praise him because of what he has done. And this is what Hezekiah is praying for, that deliver, ask for deliverance, but here was the purpose for it. It wasn't anything self-satisfying or self-beneficial to them or whatever, but it was so that all the kingdoms of the earth would know that God is the only true living God in verse 19. Here's Assyria that has took over all the other kingdoms, and naturally, if God defeated them, then it would be known among all the other nations that God was the one true God. He was more powerful. So that night, the Lord's angel went out, and he smote 5,800 of the Assyrian army in their camp. In verse 35 of 2 Kings 19 and 2 Chronicles 32:21. It wasn't Hezekiah. It wasn't the children of Israel. But it was the Lord's angel that went out and smote them. Again, 2 Kings 19:35 and 2 Chronicles 32:21. 5,800. It's 5,800 that died that night. Now, that would probably shake up your army when all those people died and you hadn't been invaded and all the inhabitants are stuck inside the city and you're thinking, well, how in the world, what happened? But the Lord went out and smote. How he did it, it doesn't say. It just says the angel went out and did that. So Sennacherib departed back to Nineveh, and he was slain by his sons. And it said that God saved Hezekiah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem. In 2 Kings 19, 36 and 37, and 2 Chronicles chapter 32, verses 21 and 22. So he did hear a rumor, he went back, he departed, and those of his own house slew him in Nineveh. So what Isaiah had said did come to pass. That's what I had on that one. Any question or comment? The next one is in 2 Chronicles, 14th chapter. The 14th chapter is Ethiopian army that attacks Judah. It's just short verses, verses 9 through 13. Now, before this, in verse 8, you had Asa and his army of men that bear targets and spears. Out of Judah, 300,000, and out of Benjamin that bare shields and drew bows, 280,000. And all these were mighty men of valor. And there came out against them Zerah the Ethiopian with a host of 1,000,000 and 300 chariots. Now, this 1,000,000, in looking at it, That equates to a million. The other translations show a million on that. It's not a thousand, just being 2,000, but it's a million, 1,000 times 1,000. Now, when you look at Asa, he had 300,000 from Judah. He had 280,000 from Benjamin. So there you've got 580,000. You got half, a little over half a million. And Ethiopia had a million and 300 chariots. So you can figure the odds, 2 to 1. That's what it was, 2 to 1. So Asa went out against him, and they set the battle in array in the valley of Zephathah at Merishah. And Asa cried unto the Lord his God, and said, Lord, it is nothing with thee to help, whether with many or with them that have no power. You look at the faith that Asa had here, and the realization. This is something that he hadn't learned firsthand, but it's something that he had to rely upon by what had been told and passed down as far as what God had done through all these other battles that we've studied about, that they knew about and what God had done. I'm sure the first one would have been with the Egyptians. That was probably told and told over and over again with the Passover as far as what it meant, that the Lord delivered them out of this great empire with nothing. They didn't fight for it. They did anything. They went out and they even spoiled them and took what substance they had. So I'm sure that, you know, this was known. So Asa cried unto the Lord his God and said, Lord, it's nothing with you to help, whether with many or with them that have no power. Help us, O Lord our God, for we rest on thee, and in thy name we go against this multitude. O Lord, thou art our God. Let not man prevail against thee. So the Lord smote the Ethiopians before Asa and before Judah, and the Ethiopians fled. And Asa and the people that were with him pursued them unto Gerar, and the Ethiopians were overthrown, that they could not recover themselves, for they were destroyed before the Lord and before his host, and they carried away much spoil. Again, God's part and direction in the deliverance of this with Asa and his men. Battle that they were outnumbered 2 to 1. The Ethiopians were far more superior, had chariots, had everything else, but yet Asa had God upon his side. And he depended upon God, and that's who he went to. And God did deliver and come through. 1 Samuel, the 30th chapter. Verses 1 through 25. You have where David and his men were come to Ziklag, and the Amalekites had invaded the south in Ziklag and had smitten it and burned with fire. And they had taken the women captive that were therein, and they slew not any either great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. Verse 3, so David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captive. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. David's two wives were also taken captive. And David was greatly distressed, for the people spoke of stoning him, because the soul of all his people, the people, was grieved, every man for his son and for his daughters. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. Here you have David. Kind of get the picture. The city has been took. His wives have been took. Other people's sons and daughters have all been took. The men that were with him are turning on him. They're wanting to stone him. Imagine how David felt. He didn't have a friend in the world the time all this was going on, because it seemed like everybody was against him. So how did he encourage himself? It says he encouraged himself in the Lord his God. Why? Because David had done been through enough. David knew, as we all know, that God knows what goes on. God knows what happens in our life. God knows the thoughts and intentions of each and every one. And God is a judge. And God will hear those that plead their case before him. And God is just because he knows the thoughts and intentions of why people do things. And in knowing that, that's what God set about to clear. That's why David was encouraged in that. He knew that he hadn't done anything against Saul. But yet Saul chased him all around the place. And David said before, you know, I stand before you, Saul, clean of heart, not guilty in anything. And God knew that. And God delivered David over and over again. So that's what David had learned. And it's the same thing we learn over and over again. No matter what the odds are, no matter what people do, no matter what their motives or actions are, all that matters in the long run is God knows. God knows what goes down and what happens, and God will take care of it in His time. And David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. And David said to Abiathar the priest, I pray you bring hither the ephod. And Abiathar brought the ephod to David. And David inquired at the Lord, saying, shall I pursue after this truth? Shall I overtake them? Again, he went to God. God, it's your direction, it's your control. Should I? And the Lord answered him, for thou shalt surely overtake them, and without fail recover them all. And so David pursues them, he and his 400 men, for 200 abode behind. And they were faint because they could not go over the brook. So his forces are down, but yet he goes and he fights and he gets back those. He recovered all that the Amalekites had carried away, and David rescued his two wives in verse 18. Verse 17, he smote them from the twilight even until the evening of the next day, and there escaped not a man of them save 400 young men that rode upon camels and fled. So David routed them by the help of God. God is the one that did it. And he recovered it. And he brought them back. So again, God was behind this, and God is the one that gave the deliverance. Those are some out of the Old Testament. I'm not going to leave the New Testament without hitting a little bit of it, and those we're all familiar with. In Acts the fifth chapter, we see again the deliverance of God, verses 17 through 23. Then the high priest rose up, and all they that were with him, which is the sect of the Sadducees, and were filled with indignation. And they laid their hands on the apostles and put them in the common prison. They're in the prison. Usually there's wards. There's troops around. You just don't walk in and walk out. But the angel of the Lord, by night, opened the prison doors and brought them forth and said, go stand and speak in the temple to the people all the words of this life. And when they heard that, they entered into the temple early in the morning and taught. God delivered them. But the high priest came, and they were with him, and called the council together, and all the sin of the children of Israel, and sent to the prison to have them brought. But when the officers came and found them not in the prison, they returned and told, saying, the prison truly found we shut, with all safety, and the keeper standing without before the doors. But when we had opened, we found no man within. They were delivered. Still secure. Doors were shut. Guards were still there. Nobody inside. The angel delivered them and took them out of prison. Now, again, kind of the point in this, you know, it strengthened their faith. They gave praise to God. But look at what God has done. What would we think about that? If God can do that, then the question that begs in our mind is, what can't God not do in our life? What can He not do? Acts the 12th chapter, verses 3 through 11. We have that of Peter. Because it was pleased the Jews, talking about Herod, he further wanted to take Peter also. And when he had apprehended him, he put him in prison and delivered him to 4 quadrennions of soldiers. This was 4 of 4, so you've got 16 soldiers around him. To keep him, intending after Easter to bring him forth to the people. Peter therefore was kept in prison, but prayer was made for him without ceasing. And when Herod would have brought him forth the same night, Peter was sleeping between 2 soldiers, bound with 2 chains, and the keepers before the door kept the prison. Picture that in your mind. There's 16 soldiers around. Peter's in there. He's got 2 soldiers on either side of him. He's bound with chains to him. And then there's keepers before the door, keeping the prison door. So any movement, whatever, these soldiers, the Roman soldiers, paid with their life if a prisoner escaped or got away. It was their life. That was the Roman code. So you know that they slept lightly. They were there to watchful. But behold, the angel of the Lord came upon him, and a light shined in the prison. And he smote Peter on the side and said, "Raise up, rise quickly," and his chains fell off from his hands. It doesn't say what happened to the soldiers that were with him. I don't know. But one can only imagine. If you saw an angel of the Lord standing there and you saw chains falling off of Peter, either you'd be passed out or you'd be running, screaming, you'd be doing something. You know, I don't know, but if, you know, we're not told from that perspective. We're just told from Peter's. And the angel said, "Gird thyself and bind on thy sandals." And he did so, and he said, "Cast thy garment about thee and follow me." And he went out and followed him, and wist not that it was true which was done by the angel, but thought he was saw a vision. Peter thought he was dreaming. But when they were past the first and the second ward, again, you think about that, left the two that was beside him, left the keepers at the door, past the first ward, past the second ward, they came into the iron gate that leadeth into the city. And what did the iron gate do? It opened to them of his own accord. And they went out and passed on through one street, and forthwith the angel departed from him. Peter's on his own. But again, the Lord delivered him. And that's the good part about it. You have Acts, the 16th chapter. Again, these are all familiar that we have. Verses 23 through 29, where Paul and Silas are in prison. Verse 22, the multitude rose up together against them, and the magistrates rent off their clothes and commanded to beat them. And when they had laid many stripes on them, they cast them into prison, charging the jailer to keep them safely. Who, having received such a charge, he thrust them into the inner prison and made their feet fast in the stocks. And at midnight, Paul and Silas prayed and sang praises. The prisoners heard them. There was a great earthquake, so that the foundation of the prison was shaken, and immediately all the doors were open, and everyone's bands were loosed. That's how the Lord delivered them, through that. You have in Acts 23rd chapter, verses 9 through 24, the plot against Paul. Through God's providence, Paul's sister's son heard what was going to happen to Paul, that the Jews had made a charge among themselves that they were going to kill Paul no matter what. They weren't going to eat, weren't going to do anything else until they killed Paul. That plot was made known to the sister's son who heard that, and so therefore he went and told the captain, and then they knew that they had to get Paul out, which they did undercover with a group of soldiers. So Paul was delivered in that way. Again, by the providence of God, certain people were at certain places hearing certain things for the deliverance to be brought forward. Matthew, the first chapter. We spoke about this a little bit last week. In God's salvation through history, God's bigger salvation was that we have the forgiveness of our sins. That Jesus would come and die upon the cross so that we could be saved or have deliverance from sin. Salvation. All through His plan, God had certain things in line. We've spent a quarter looking at a lot of these. Abraham, he was spared in the battle for Lot. He was spared in Egypt, and he was spared by Abimelech. And Abraham is in the genealogy that Jesus came through. Jacob spared Esau, who wanted to slay him when he was beguiled into the birthright of his dad. Esau said, I'm going to grieve for my dad, but as soon as that's over with, you know, Jacob is mine. I'm going to murder him. I'm going to kill him. But God delivered him. Perez and Jerah of Judah and Tamar are mentioned in verse 3. And when you go back and look concerning Tamar, Judah had relations with her as she was kind of disguised or whatever. And so when Judah found out about this woman that had done that, she was expecting or whatever, he automatically put the death sentence on her and said, she needs to be killed. She's going to be killed. This was a direct order from him, from Judah, and him being the one in authority. Tamar is going to die. He didn't know it was Tamar, but he said she's going to die. Of course, then it's revealed to him, you know, the child that I have, you know, it's by you, Judah. And so her life was spared. And of course, she is mentioned in the genealogy also. She was saved from death and from the guilt of that in Genesis 38 chapter. She's mentioned there in verse 3 of Matthew chapter 1. Salmon and Rahab, of course we know about Rahab. She was spared by the Israelites from the whole city being destroyed. She begat Boaz. Ruth and Boaz, of course Ruth was spared when she left with Naomi. She was spared and was able to find food and substance. And Boaz took her to wife, and they begat Obed. And Obed begat Jesse, who begat David. And of course, we know David said, well, I've been saved from the bear, and I've been saved from the lion, and he was saved from Goliath, and he was saved from Saul. He was delivered from all those. Also within that lineage, in Luke, the 3rd chapter, verse 36, under Mary's side, you have Lamech begat Noah, who begat Shem. And of course, we know that Shem was the generations after the flood, but when you think about Noah being in the lineage of Jesus, Noah was delivered also. Noah and his family. Then when you look at the Lord Himself, God delivered Jesus from Herod in Matthew the 2nd chapter, verses 13 and 14, from being slain in Bethlehem. God delivers. And it wasn't just out of kindness that He delivered, but He had His plan. And that's been His plan all along. And God's plan has always been that mankind be with Him for an eternity. And that's why He brought about this salvation, this deliverance through Jesus, so that we could be with Him and have that, as Milton says, that paradise lost regained again, so that we can be in heaven for an eternity with Him, and He has provided the way. So that's God's deliverance and salvation through history, physical, but also the main purpose was for the spiritual part. Appreciate it. Thank you very much.